Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to the Slow Dive podcast. In case you forgot who I was, it's Farida and Drew. Hi, Drew.
Hey, I'm back.
Yes, we are back. Season two. This is our second episode. We had a bit of a hiatus from our first episodes of season two. But we're back. We're back into it. We're a little bit restored, a little bit excited to dive into some newer episodes and introduce some amazing guests in the upcoming weeks with you. But today we are going to be talking about a couple of different things. But let's just start with, first of all, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, obviously. So we're going to start with that. I think just to lead in, I mean, why were we on hiatus, Drew? Like, I mean, let's discuss that.
You know, I think after Sick, Sad, and Mad, we had planned at least a few weeks off to start planning new episodes. But then there was the fires, if I'm remembering correctly, right? And you were actually evacuated. Right. I think you texted me from, were you staying at like a,
no, I had to go to a community shelter.
That's where it was,
because, yeah. But then I decided to be like, you know, one of those, survivor people and say, you know what, I'm going to stay at home without the electricity. And I pulled out like my lanterns and,
nice.
Yeah, which was crazy because, everyone was like, there's no electricity. What are you doing in your place? Just so everybody knows, I was not affected by the Palisade fires or any of the Palisade. Where I'm at, I was closest towards Calabasas and Malibu. And we had an evacuation by our fire department because of the winds and everything happening in Calabasas. There was a chance that our neighborhood would also be affected. So as a safety precaution, they did these rollouts where they took us off the grid as a safety measure. So that is why we had to do that, because everything, I mean, you know, refrigeration, when you don't have electricity, you have nothing, right? So all the food in the refrigerator, all that, so it's uncomfortable. And for me, luckily, I don't have anyone with any any health needs where they're that would affect them. And I did go during the day because I'm a internet junkie and I need to check my work emails. So that was nice to meet people in the shelter, but it was a wild time. I mean, I'm just very grateful I wasn't affected, but as you know, Drew, our city, our industry, our friends, our businesses, we all know somebody who has been impacted by this. And,
I mean, we were all impacted in some small way. You know, I didn't work the month of January because every job I had was canceled. So,
yeah.
And my girlfriend came and lived with me for a week because she lives in Pasadena, and the smoke and the wind, she wasn't in an evacuation zone, but the smoke and the wind was so awful around her apartment that she left and stayed with me. I fortunately, I'm in a part of town where we were not affected by the fire. So you wouldn't know that there was a fire from where I was living. It was,
We
were really lucky.
Does your girlfriend have like asthma or like breathing issue? Cause I know my friends who deal with asthma, just the smoke quality, even if you aren't affected, like your home or properties or where you're living wasn't affected in the line of fire, just the smoke quality, if you're asthmatic or have like sensitive lungs or have those, that's very difficult. So like when we said we were on hiatus, there's a lot. And I think we can start with this discussion, obviously mental health. Our industry, film, television, media, has been, since the pandemic, has been dealing with a lot of stuff, and with the economic viability of the industry here, at least in the Los Angeles greater area, and compounded with the pandemic, the writer's strike, the contraction, and then the fires. I just think a lot of people were just like, oh my God, like, what else do we need to happen? Like, and it still is, but at least in that time, the beginning of the year, we were all like kind of down, like just, you know,
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, I mean, so I think, yeah, like you said, you weren't working that month. A lot of people weren't working. There was a lot of canceled productions. Yeah. I know a lot of stuff was sidelined just for us to like deal with it. And if you had friends and family that you were helping out, who had lost their home or just needed support, as a city, of course, I don't know, did you do any volunteering? I mean, there was like, we did a lot of the volunteering. There was just like a need for clothing, need for food, need for just basic staples. So like the Rose Bowl and different areas around town were set up as, you know, climate disaster relief situations. I live a little bit closer out here to Malibu. So like when we had everything closed from the PCH, from Canaan all the way down to the Palisades, and that just opened like, I think in March, which is like just with the fires and the mudslides. So yeah. There was just, I mean, every day, I think after our news cycle kind of slowed down a bit, the national news cycle, like the local news is still pretty relevant. Like if, you know,
yeah.
Yeah. So mentally, speaking of mental health, I think Californians, man, and Southern Californians, especially people in the business, we're dealing with it. And what I've noticed, and I don't know if you've noticed it, Drew, a lot more talk has been happening about the mental health. Like now, like, you know, different film groups are doing stuff. I don't know. Have you noticed that? Like people are starting to be like more open about like what's happening and we can talk about it now.
You know, I've noticed it over the years that I've been in this business that people talk more about, taking care of yourself mentally while working in our field. Cause it really used to not be something that anyone talked about, when I started a decade ago. And now I think there's a lot more. Maybe it was you who showed me this. Actually, there was a PSA that I saw recently that was aimed at the film industry, and it was a mental health awareness PSA. We'll have to find this and maybe link it in the show notes, but I'm sure if anyone showed this to me, it was probably you, Farida.
It's the entertainment fund for the production people. They had set out a lot, and like, it was on one of their websites. It's like very popular.
And it follows like a production assistant who's, you know, overworked and stressed out, and then I think at the end of the PSA someone like checks on them, you know. And I'd never seen something like that was so targeted at our industry. But we really have needed it lately. I also did want to say, on the topic of mental health, here in LA, the longest mental health care worker strike in US history just ended yesterday. The Kaiser mental health care workers were on strike for over 6 months, which I know because my girlfriend is a LCSW at Kaiser.
She's doing great work.
I was with her, you know, the whole time she was out of work, and now she's back. Today is her second day back at work.
Yay. And forgive me, but for our audience, can you illuminate us what they were striking for? Like what was the
There were a number of things that they were striking for. A big one was their pensions. So only about half, maybe less, of the Kaiser mental health workers in SoCal have a pension. And that's because I think in 2015, they took it out of the contract. And so people that were working there before had it, people that were working after did not. The other big one was, it's patient management time, which is basically the time that your therapist has to like write up your notes or make phone calls if they have to call somebody about your case. All the kind of administrative stuff that's not just, you know, time with the patient. Kaiser workers didn't have a lot of that time allotted in their weeks. And Kaiser was reserving the right to schedule patients during that time. So it was pretty common for Kaiser workers to have no patient management time during the week. Wow. And so that means that almost all of it gets done after work, off the clock. They now have 7 hours of patient management time, and 2 of those hours can be booked into, but 5 of them are safe. They're guaranteed patient management time per week.
Wow, so. and that's really, I'm glad you're bringing this up, because that is important work, social work, social mm-hmm. workers, doctors, counselors, therapists, like, and I know, because in my volunteer work with immigrant rights and refugee rights, like, these are all the other support systems that we need systems in place. People really use their emotional energy, and you burn out and you carry yeah. that with you. Mm-hmm. So if you don't even have time and you're overbooked, I mean, and like I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm just thinking, yeah, that's a lot of like, that's a lot of emotional weight on a person. And yes. I also know, we don't take care of our social workers, teachers, and yeah. first responders the way we should in this country. Either.
Yeah, like, the result
it's just
is the,
a lot of hard work. Yeah,
the people that are taking care of our mental health don't have time to take care of their own mental health. I know I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's that. How long was the strike? I mean, that's good. That's why unions and strikes work. This is exactly
why.
It was
almost 7 months.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
wow.
They began in October. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned immigrants and refugees, and there's another group of people there. I mean, things that have been going on cannot be good for your mental health in that area.
I mean, let's just assume that since we had a change in our elected officials this year, a lot has gone down since our hiatus. So much has happened since
yes.
our last 3 months. That's what I'm saying. We are now, I don't know about you. I have something where I process everything delayed, like, I don't know if it's just a habit, if it's a personality thing, it's just the way I cope with life. But like, I compartmentalize stuff and I set it aside, and then later I process it, whether it's through art, journaling, whatever. I'm like, when I sit back and I think about how many things on a larger scale have happened to our country that are affecting our mental health, cost of living crisis, crazy hyperinflation, tariffs, all the other things, then like the foreign policy end of it, conflict end of it, and then just elected officials without, you know, saying too much, because that's another thing. Yeah. Censorship. You're like, what can we say anymore? You know?
I know, right? It's a scary time for sure.
So this is like another layer of like the 7-layer dip of like trauma that we're all like dealing with. And it's,
you know,
crazy.
You said that you have that delayed response to things, but I don't think that's always such a bad thing. You know, in that that TV show, the FX show Shogun, Toranaga, the character on the show, he's like, something terrible happens and he says, I'm gonna take a nap. And he says, well, there's almost no bad thing that gets worse from having a good night's sleep. And
true.
He's right. Maybe you can take that all too far if you just ignore something for too long. But you know, something stressful happens, just sleep on it. Sometimes you wake up and you feel a little better and you can tackle it.
You know, I was, as our preparation for our first episode back from our hiatus, I have a few notes, and I was like, you know, there's the 5 stages of grief before we get into other topics. There's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And that could be applied to a lot, that those stages of grief can be applied to a lot of things. And I can tell you, let's just talk about the industry since we're both in it, film and television. I personally am going through a different, I'm now at the acceptance part of my industry, a grief process. I think the last 5 months, even before the fires, there was like, okay, it's going to let up. It's going to be different. And it just seemed to get incrementally worse. And I did have a little depression episode, no stigma, but like where I was just like, man, this sucks. Like Hollywood is definitely restructuring and evolving. It's no longer going to be the same Hollywood ever again. Yeah. And a lot of us, at least for me, I wouldn't say a lot of us, but I'll speak on for myself. There was a lot of bargaining, like, oh, maybe if I just do this. Now it's like I've come to a place where, okay, I've accepted that Hollywood's changing. The business model's changing. We don't know what exactly it looks like for indie players. We know what it looks like for studios and streamers. Where do I fit in? And I've accepted the part that I will have to adapt. And I started pivoting and adapting. But there was a good 2 months of like a little bit of delusion, denial, a little coping. And then it's like you hear about your friends and colleagues moving out of state, moving to Georgia, or like deciding to go get other jobs outside the industry. And they're like, you know, this is just not feasible.
You know, honestly, yeah. It's probably not the best thing to admit, but I didn't look for jobs outside the industry, but I thought very seriously about what I could do if I had to leave this industry. And, you know, it was scary at first, but, I did some research. I, you know, put down a list of like things that I could do, things that it wouldn't be too hard to train into, or things I already have the training for. And having that and then going forward, staying in the industry, it was helpful to have. It was helpful to know that there's options for me, you know, that whatever happens, I'll take care of myself. People don't like to think about leaving the industry when they work in this industry. But I think that when you take some time to think about it, it becomes a less scary thing, and then you can move forward without fear. It's good for your mental health.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, there is this exodus after the fires, after the contractions. Like, ultimately, like, I feel like if you're in a position where you have a family and you have a lot of things you have to take care of, ultimately, ideally, you want everything, but a lot of people can't do that. They need to do something different. Mm. And I've kind of been on this. I mean, I'm a lot older than you, Drew.
Not a lot older.
I am. Call me Auntie Farida. But I've been through this before, where there were cycles of business. And back in the real estate crash in 2009, that happened. Yeah. And there was a lot of like restructuring, and there was a lot of like, okay, where do we go from now? And I came back into the film the second time, the television the second time, right at the time of the pandemic, because I'm so smart. And I was like, yes. And then we had lockdowns. So like, I have been pivoting ever since I got back into it. I had a really good run in social impact and nonprofit and advocacy work in my break from television and film. I was on a different career path, and my alternate career was, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go into city planning, urban planning, or social impact. And I was looking into MBAs and all that stuff. And then I was like, no, I'm going to just go back into it, give it my one last shot. And then I came back into it, and then the COVID-19 happened. And ever since then, though, honestly, it has been pretty crazy. And now I feel like, you know, and I say this because there's a lot of people, I don't know, when I was younger, there was a lot of like shame for me attached with like your job and your income is your like your whole identity. But it's not. When I was younger, I was devastated when I went through losses like that, because I felt like, these material items or this quote lifestyle is like it equals to who I am as my self-worth. But now that I'm older and no longer a spring chicken, I've been through life and lost stuff and got a lot of stuff. You realize it's just stuff, and you can't control the economy. You really can't. Like, stuff like tariffs, like, you're going to get sidelined. You're going to get curveballed. Like, if the industry is going to disrupt and you're one of the people that is a part of the disruption because it's being automated, or they're deciding to do global productions because it's not feasible to do it here. It's just not affordable. Yeah. Now we see state officials trying to get those credits. It's like, you know, this has been happening over a decade. This could have been the deal from the get-go, but we waited till it got really bad to now this urgency when you're realizing a lot of your community is leaving. And that's the thing that I realized. If you truly love what you can do, you can still do it and take on another career, a second career, another thing. Because I don't think people are one trick ponies, so to speak. I think every step of the way in our life, we have opportunities to unlock another level of ourselves. So if you're faced with a challenge, let's just say the economy sucks right now for a lot of Americans. Yeah, you know, maybe living in the most expensive city, getting paid the least amount may not work for the long term, but maybe it would work if you're younger because you don't have that much to, you know, you can plan longer. There's no shame in it. You can still make movies and still do your thing wherever you're at. At the same time, if you want to go back to law school and be an entertainment attorney or be an IP specialist, you can do that. Who's to say you can't do both? Because that's where I'm at now. I'm like, maybe this is happening because it's supposed to happen. Everything has a boom and bust cycle. Where do I fit in? And last year, myself and a group of other producers, we produced a workshop called, not a workshop, it was a webinar. I don't know why I said workshop, webinar, called Convergence, the Future of Work. And that was way before the fires. That was early last year. And we were talking about how producers and people who are employed in the studio system and who are on larger projects before the writer's strike and now are unemployed, what could be our pivot? If we wanted to pivot from film, what could be the other direction? And those are really healthy talks. We were the first ones doing it, which I have to say. And we had a really great panel. And we had someone from Google and talking about how AI was going to like really take up. And at that time, it was still like people were still kind of like new to ChatGPT. They're like, oh, I know what ChatGPT is. And now everybody's using it. Like I get emails with ChatGPT. I've used ChatGPT to rewrite my bio. I'm like, okay, let me include this. It's now becoming so acceptable. So I felt like I went through the grief process and now it's like, you know, I'm going to continue to work in film and television, but like, obviously if the opportunities start contracting as they are and drying up and there's just not that many, obviously you have to take care of yourself. And, I don't know, that's where I'm at. Like, you know, it gives you an opportunity or we, you know, you could always do global production. You can just be like, you know what? I'm backpacking through Spain. I'm going to go film in Turkey. I'm going to go to Korea. I don't know.
I think whatever you do, if you're a creative person, I mean, people take time off from this industry and then they come back to it. And the time that they were away, it's never time that wasted, you know. So after I finished college, I went to college for film, but then for 2 years I worked in a kitchen, and in those 2 years I learned lessons that are applicable in my you know, film industry career. A lot of times when I was in that job, that day job, I remembered this. I think it was Werner Herzog who said this, that if he started a film school, that the application to the film school would be you'd have to, like, I think he said you have to backpack from like Paris to Egypt or something and keep a journal, and then submit the journal and that's your application to the film school. Very the kind of thing that Werner Herzog would say, you know.
I love Werner Herzog. Love him.
But like that, you know, his point was just like, if you want to be a creative person, especially a filmmaker, then you should be able to like derive something from like any experience that can be, you know, especially something like that. Like, but any, your life should be kind of your resume, you know?
Yeah. It's not the destination, it's the journey. You know, it's like how you live your life. Yeah, I mean, especially for creatives, I think every experience lends to our storytelling, everything. I think the older we get, we just have more life wisdom and experiences to pull from. And I mean, yes, absolutely. I'm a realist. I know Hollywood has changed forever. I'm not holding on to the old Hollywood from like 5 years ago. Even the writers' rooms have shrunk. There's like, what, 600 less writers' jobs or something. It was like crazy. And so many people have left LA to go pursue production gigs in other states because we're just not filming out here as much. At the same time, I'm here and I'm like, this is just one thing I do, right? And I, at least in where I'm in my life, I'm like, I'm continuing taking on projects and seeing where it goes. And I always felt like when I was younger, Drew, I don't know if you feel like this, but when I was younger, I felt like if I made a commitment to this, I'll stick through it. And I have done that. But the adult version of me now says, okay, sometimes you can make some bad decisions and sometimes you have the right to change your mind. You know, like it's totally okay. Like, I'm feeling this right now. I may not feel like this 6 months from now, you know? And I think that's like obviously bespoke to everybody's circumstances and where they are in their life and what they're dealing with. But for me and my cats, it's a pretty easy decision. We're going to stay put for now. It's pretty easy.
We have to work hard so our pets can have a good life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I gotta build a legacy for my cats, Annie and Joey. You know, I gotta leave them everything in the will. That's my sister. She's my benefactor. I told her that, and she's like, "Why did you tell me that?" I said, "I don't know, just in case." Because that was another thing. You know, when the fires were happening, I'm the eldest, so I have all the. I have a lot of the family heirlooms and like the older photos and stuff. And so along with like taking care of like all the important documents, I had to pack up like photo albums and stuff. Cause that was my thing. I'm like, I don't want to lose this.
Of course not.
Sister was like, she got a little triggered and she's like, you know what, Frida, I think you should send me all the photo albums. Cause where I live, we don't have fires like you. And, and on that note, and the reason why is, and we're going to now talk about it. Because what's happening this weekend is Mother's Day, which also happens in May.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is just us, like, talking. I'm pretty sure I mentioned it. If people actually follow this every episode, maybe they caught it. They didn't. But my mom, my dear mom, passed away in August. And this time last year, I was in Texas visiting her. And obviously had no idea that she wouldn't be with us. So that's something else. Like, I think we wanted to touch on today, Drew, was like talk about Mother's Day and grief and just, you know, celebrating moms.
I'm really sorry, Frida. And this that would make this your first Mother's Day without her.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. So we were talking about delaying processing. This is crazy. We're going to talk about grief. Obviously, this is the first parent I lost. My dad is still with us. Thank you, God. But I did not have the reaction that a lot of people have. Like my brother and my sister grieved very heavily and still are. I was very much like, oh, okay. And I was like, what is wrong with me? And then in January, the floodgates and the emotions, all that, like, oh my God, my mom's really gone. It hit me in January. Like, I knew she was gone intellectually, and I obviously cried and grieved her, but like the second layer of grief or the waves of grief, it did not affect me till January. And now I have to say, I can't even, talk about her without tearing up, and it just feels like she just passed away yesterday. And she didn't, and I'm pretty sure for anyone who's lost a loved one, yeah, it's strange navigating this. So to all the people out there who've lost parents, their moms, on this Mother's Day, my hearts go out to you as well. It is an awful thing, but it's obviously life. It ends at some point, unfortunately. We all go somewhere. And Drew, also, I wanted to say my condolences
to you. My grandmother passed away a little over 2 weeks ago. And that was a pretty crazy week for me because I happened to be on my way to a wedding. And then also a few days later was my birthday, which is also my dad's birthday.
Oh my gosh.
Which is also my girlfriend's birthday.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's crazy.
So, and then because my grandmother was Jewish, the funeral had to be as soon as possible, so that it ended up being on our birthday.
Wow.
So we all, and none of us could be there because, you know, we were in Texas for the wedding, and then my dad happened to get sick that week and couldn't travel.
Oh my gosh.
So we were all attending the funeral over Zoom on our birthday, which was that Sunday. And then I had to fly back to LA like the very next day too. So it was a really crazy week, and I really didn't have time to process any of it until like I got home. And our flight back was Monday, and we landed around 3 p.m. And then, of course, it took us until 6:30 to actually get home because of how awful LAX is, one of the worst airports in the world.
Yes, and when
I was home for the first time after all that stuff happened, it was like, whoa, you know, all of that happened. So
are you still processing, or is it still sinking in? Because it's so early. It's recent.
Honestly, yes. I mean, there's times where like it hits me like, oh yeah, grandma's gone, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she was sick for a while, and so we all knew that this was coming, and none of us were shocked or anything. But it's obviously still a tragedy in our family. I mean, you talk about a matriarch. That's what my grandmother was. My mother
told me about her personality. What was she like?
Oh my gosh. My grandmother was the kind of person who, she was in control of everything. So my mom told me this story, after she died. So when my mom was pregnant with me, my due date was May, I think my mom said May 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And but my grandmother said to her, you're gonna have your baby the day I had my baby. And my mom said, okay, sure, Myrna Franz Blau was my grandmother's name. She said sure, but then it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was born on my dad's birthday.
That is amazing.
I mean, she wasn't just the head of our family, she ruled the world. She just said it, and it was true.
What does she like to do? Was she as creative like you too?
You know, yeah, she, so after she retired from teaching, she took up painting, and, all of us have some paintings of hers in our houses now. She was a pretty good painter.
Nice.
We all have one, actually, that's not true. I don't have one, but everyone else in the family has one. I just haven't picked one yet.
Yeah.
I mean, she really cared about all of us. I mean, whenever I have three cousins and my sister, so she had five grandchildren. And whenever one of us had like a school assignment, especially like a book report or something, she would get the book and read it and mark up with notes and then like help us with the book report.
Aww.
The last time I was staying there, at their house, we found in the basement, this copy of Cry the Beloved Country, mm-hmm. which is a really good book.
Yeah.
And it had these notes all over it, and it was grandma's handwriting. And I guess it was from when my cousin Ethan was assigned to read it in high school. And he's in his 20s and lives in New York now. Yeah, so that's how she was. She always looked out for us. She always wanted what was best for us. And whatever she thought was best for us, like, that's how it had to be. She would make it so.
So let me ask you, what was like her like one like a piece of advice she'd always give? Because, you know, grandmas and moms, they always have like a couple of things they always like remind you to do. Was there anything that you can think of right now?
You know, when I was little, she used to tell me, you know, you may not have gold in your pocket, but you can nothing can ever take the gold in your heart. It's so corny.
Oh my
but
gosh.
Like, I remember it very vividly because she said it to me multiple times.
See?
Yeah.
That's so sweet. That's so sweet. So how are you going to like honor your grandmother now? Like, I know, like, are you have any like memorial ideas? Or are you going to do something in her honor? I'm just what? Because I mean, everyone has,
you know. I know we're going to travel to see my grandfather very soon. My girlfriend and I are going to go. We were lucky that my girlfriend got to meet her. They loved each other.
Oh, that's good.
So we're going to go visit soon. And I think we really want to make sure that Papa is happy and taken care of, because I think that's what she would have wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I think... I mean, her funeral being on our birthday, I think, is also what she would have wanted. So we'll always remember.
Yeah, no, that's wild, because that's one of those things. I'll tell you a story that's very similar to yours, but not quite similar, but not exactly. So in the Islamic calendar, mm-hmm. we follow Islamic calendar, so it's based on a lunar thing, and so the month of Ramadan, I was born on Eid. That's the holiday that closes Ramadan, right? Eid al-Fitr. And my mom was born on Chandrat, which means moon's night of the moon, which they tell you what day Eid is going to be based on the moon sighting. So my mom and I always had that little conversation. Like, it was always a funny thing. Like, when I was younger, my aunts and uncles would be like, yeah, you know, your mom went into labor on Eid. And we were all, it was like, you know, it's like our holiday. It's like our Christmas, our big holiday. So we had that in common. And I don't know, like, I think I've turned into my mother. Like, that was something that when I was like, people say, do you turn into your mom when you get older? I've started developing a lot of her personality traits, or like, as I things I didn't quite understand when I was younger, because I'm like, I'm my mom, because I was a rebellious young kid. But now I'm like, I'm that person. I'm that eccentric old lady. So I don't know. I'm still processing my mom's grief. I have to say, I don't know, because your grandmother Myrna was, she also had what we call like a gift, and she said she knew that your dad was going to be born the same day. Yeah, you were going to be born the same day her son was.
Yeah.
Which is a gift, right? Knowing that, just like, ta-da, spiritually. You know, a lot of ladies in my family have that too. And one of the good things is that my mom has, and this may sound weird to some people, but I'll share it because, hey, this is a podcast, we're speaking. My mom has visited me many times in my dreams since her passing, and in a very like the younger version of herself, a healthier version. She had a very, during the pandemic, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia, and it progressed really quickly, and it caught my family off guard. So she went from being someone who could do everything to being in bed and not being able to do anything over a course of 2 years. So the last Mother's Day, when I saw my mom, she was in bed. She couldn't really do a lot. And me, my brother, and my sister, we were in Texas because that's where my parents live as well. And I mean, part of me knew that this could be the last time I saw her, but I wasn't 100% sure. Because you don't want that. And it was wild. I mean, it's crazy. It's a year ago. And and her thing was, my brother lived in another city at the time, another state. My sister lived in with that, like in their hometown in Texas. And I lived on the West Coast. And she just wanted all her kids to be together at one time. And forever since the pandemic, it was becoming a challenge for us. And somehow Mother's Day last year, my brother, my sister, and myself, we were all together with my mom on Mother's Day. And that was kind of an eerie feeling. We didn't want to talk about it because her health was like deteriorating. Like her mobility was, we just didn't want to say it out loud. Like, is this happening? Because we just tried so many times with schedules. It's just one of those things. And now I look back and I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I went last year at the time I did, because I was also having trouble getting out of LA for a number of work related and health related reasons. Just finding in my schedule, it just wasn't working. But yeah, I mean, losing a grandparent, parent, anyone, I mean, it, like I said, for me, I think everyone has their relationships with their loved ones. Even if they're complicated relationships, like it's just one of those things, like,
yeah,
the deeper the love, the stronger the bond, the greater the pain of loss. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Even if you know that life ends for all of us, and you're like, okay, this person could be 100, this person could be 97, they could have a beautiful life, they could be in distress, you still don't like the idea of them leaving. And it's just, it's a whole new, for me, Drew, it's opened a lot of like, I'm like, oh, okay, after losing a parent, it changes you. For me, it changed me. Like, I'm like, okay, life is getting serious. Not that it wasn't serious before, but it's something like having like this safety net of knowing both your parents are alive, just knowing that. And even if you just any parent figure, maybe you don't have the best parents, but like whoever is your figurehead, parent figure in your life, I don't know, it's an added level of security and love that you know. So when one person leaves, it's like now it's like, oh gosh, now I know what this pain feels like. So I can understand other people who are grieving their parents' loss, and it's a tough road, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a very deep and personal.
Yeah, we got really into our personal lives at this one. I don't think we've normally done that, but it was good. It was good to talk about that stuff with you, Farida.
Yeah.
And I hope it was good for our listeners too.
Yeah. I'm going to say, cause I know we're going to wrap this up, and since it is mental health, and who's your favorite TV mom or film mom?
Oh, that's really hard.
Do you have one or two? Okay,
so this is an interesting one, I think. Maybe not that interesting. I really love Buffy's mom on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. Thought
she's really great, supportive, understanding mom of the wild, you know, fantastical stuff that's happening to her daughter. And then also, well, I don't want to spoil anything for someone that's never watched Buffy, but there's a very, very powerful episode of that show that pertains to a lot of stuff we've talked about on this episode about Buffy's mom. So I think it comes around season 4 or 5. I haven't watched it in a long time, but it's a very impactful episode of the show.
Yeah, I have a couple. I like Marge Simpson. I think she's eccentric and quirky. And I also like, I watched this show when I was younger. So Gilmore Girls, the mom from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. I like the relationship, but I don't know. I think Morticia Addams is really cool too.
Yes.
I mean, I have the Addams family chair. Like that's why I have it. Like I'm obsessed with the Addams family, and I love their relationship. I love their family. I grew up watching it, and I was like, she is such a badass. Like
Morticia and Gomez really have like the most enviable.
I mean, I'm not Morticia, but if I can find a Gomez in life again, I would be set. I love Gomez. That is my type out there. Just letting y'all know.
Yeah. I wanted to throw another one in, and it's not necessarily because she's a great mom, but it's on TV. It's airing right now. Edie Karn on Andor, Cyril's mom.
Oh, okay.
She isn't the best mom, but she's a very memorable mom. And especially as a Jewish person, very relatable. She's not like my mom, but she is a lot like my grandma, actually.
Now I have to watch it.
It's really good. I'm not like a fanboy of stuff like that. I haven't really liked Star Wars since I was a kid. but Andor, incredible, incredible television show.
Drew, before we sign off, what is one thing you love about your mother?
I really admire that my mom is a free spirit, that she lives very authentically. Maybe we'll cut this out. I don't know. But my parents are separated. They're divorced. And the reason is because my mom came out as gay about, let me do the math, 15 years ago. And, you know, she became very depressed around that time. And then through therapy realized that this was the reason, is because she didn't realize that she had suppressed it since she was like a teenager. And so they separated amicably, you know, it's not anyone's fault that that happened.
Yeah, of
you know?
Course.
And, but then ever since she's come out, she's lived very authentically and very freely. And I have tried to, you know, follow her example there.
That's beautiful. No, I mean, that's beautiful. You should live your authentic life and be free spirited. It takes a lot of guts to be who you are, you know, like we're in a society where like, you know, yeah. And I mean, yeah, hats off to your mom. That's amazing. I will say my mother, she was very like, she calls it like a seat. Like you can't bullshit her. Like she had a good bullshit meter. And I like that about her. She was tough, but she was a softy. So because she was like a very ambitious, strong, passionate woman in her younger years before she got married, I think there was this persona that she wasn't a softy, but she was very overprotective. And I think when I think of Mama Bear, like the side of being protected, like that's how she was. She wasn't, I wouldn't say she was a coddler. Like that's why I think my sister and I were so tough and we can like, we're like suck it up, get through it, push through it. Like I think the things I learned from my mom were to exercise patience, persist, and you'll get through anything, you know? And I really admired that about my mom. And honestly, the best thing I miss about my mom that I will never get to see in this life, which I will forever miss, is her smile. She had a really beautiful smile. And yeah, that's what I'm going to miss about my mom. But my mom was an amazing person. She did a lot of good. She did a lot of good things and people didn't know about it. That was the thing. She just generally did good things and she didn't make fuss about it, like, which I thought was very altruistic of her. And I was, I'll miss my mom, but you know, she'll probably visit me in my dreams, hopefully. And,
I'm sure,
as a young and vibrant self, but that's beautiful. What about Myrna? What about your grandmother? What is one thing you love about your grandmother? Are you going to miss about your grandmother?
Really just how much she cared about all of us and how much effort that she put into, you know, our lives. I mean, you know, every year she would call on a birthday and sing happy birthday to us. We also, every year she would send us like a custom made birthday card that had like pictures of us that she'd taken that year. And it was like custom written. I mean, like I mentioned about how she'd always help us with the homework when we were growing up. You know, she was actually the first person to know that I had ADHD. Because she had taught fourth grade before my dad and my aunt were born. And she just recognized that right away when I was really young. I think before I'd even started kindergarten.
Yeah. Sounds like a wonderful lady. And
thank you. Yeah, she was.
And I love hearing people. I love hearing grandkids and sons. And I think that's the way we can honor our past loved ones, is to remember the good things they brought into our lives. Right. Because their presence in our lives incrementally is still pivotal. And that's how I choose to remember my mom, as just all the great things that I learned from her through her experiences. And I just want to carry it forward to my cats. That's right. No, yeah. I mean, through my podcast, through my films, through my work, through my writings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We're going to carry it on to the next generation, whether there are biological offspring or not, you know.
True. True.
Cats will benefit, hopefully, right? Maybe other humans too.
Yeah. Maybe this episode will help someone. I hope so. We were yeah. trying to ease our way back from hiatus. So we always end with a reflective question, a call to action. So Drew, what's your call to action? What
call
are we going
to action? Well, definitely call your mom if you can, or call your grandma, or call your auntie, or whoever was a maternal figure in your life.
I would say my reflective question, because this is a reflective podcast. Where in your life can you mother yourself, or what is mothering energy like? And where can you help a mom? Is there a mom in your life that you can celebrate? Is there a friend? Is there, and of course, your mom, call your mother, but celebrate the mom friends. I mean, I'll tell you, some of the best friends I have are my mom friends, because I realize they're great as friends, and they have that maternal energy. And it's like, they'll check in on me like, hey, Frida, how are you doing? And it's like, oh, thank you. I'm not just like some, you know, cat lady in my little bunker making podcasts and films. So I love my mom friends. They're cool. So hats off to all the mothers that I know, cousin moms, everyone in my family. You guys have a wonderful Mother's Day. Yeah. And we will be back in the next week or so with a few more episodes. Drew and I are back to the drawing board. We're coming back from our hiatus, and hopefully, if you guys like what we do, give us a rating. What else do we ask our guests to do, Drew? You know.
definitely rate and review. Yeah. You know, follow us wherever we're on social media. Yeah. Am I forgetting anything? I'm sorry.
No, I don't know. I think this is good. I think we're going to sign. I'm going to sign off.
Listeners, we have really amazing guests lined up. I can't say it yet. I don't think we're ready to announce it, but it's really, really cool. I'm excited for the episodes we've got coming up. So
I'm excited also, too.
Yeah, listener, get excited.
Yes, all please right. Get excited and share this podcast. We're growing it. It's season two.
Yes.
And if you have an amazing guest idea or a co-host, if you want to be a co-host, all our information is on the website, theslowdivepodcast.com. We're always looking for amazing guests that are on the intersection of impact, innovation, creativity, and community, what differences they're making. And also, we have a lot of roundtables scheduled later this year, which, you know, this is a community-centered podcast, so we want to share the mic, right? It's not just like us talking to our audience. We want people to talk and discuss and exchange ideas with us, right? So that's it for me, guys. I'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed The Slow Dive, please subscribe and leave us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq, edited by Drew Franzblatt. Our theme song is Dive by Sarah. Thanks for listening.